Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back for a brand new episode of Ladies Night with one of my absolute favorites. I am so thrilled to welcome Thomas and Mackenzie to the show. Hello and congratulations on last night's Soho.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
So I didn't warn you about this up top, but we start the show with the dice tower behind me. I've got 8 questions listed here. I give you 3 rolls on the tower and whatever we land on, that's where we start. Very random questions here. Ooh. All right. First one up. We're starting with a 3. Number 3 is 4-legged friends. Do you have any pets?
I love this question. Yes, I do. I have a dog called Totoro, she's a Bichon Frise Shih Tzu and Cavalier Cross. I miss her so much. She's getting older, so she's a little bit grumpy these days. She's quite stubborn. She's a bit cheeky. She's not the best trained dog, but I love her.
She's allowed to be whatever she wants to be because we are here to serve our pets, and that is how the relationship goes, and that's all there is to it. All right, roll number 2 for you. All right, going with a 1. I'm happy we landed on this. What do you have planned for Halloween?
I feel guilty saying this, but I don't have anything planned for Halloween. I am not, maybe I'm lazy, I don't know, but I don't put a lot of effort into dressing up. I don't put a lot of effort into decorating. I know it's really disappointing. It's not really my holiday. It's not when I thrive, but I admire everyone who pulled out all the stops.
All right, we could fix this a little. I feel like I should give you a Halloween movie recommendation, but first, okay, just so I get a sense of your horror taste, what is your favorite horror movie that you've seen?
My favorite horror movie that I've seen is, am I allowed to say, I mean, this isn't a horror movie, but it's really scary. Am I allowed to say Coraline?
No, it's a pretty creepy movie.
Yeah, I want to say Coraline. I think that's the one that comes to mind now. I just think it's really beautifully made. I love animation. Sometimes I like it more than like live performances.
That actually makes a recommendation very easy. So you just need to watch The Nightmare Before Christmas on Halloween. And it's just one big celebration of Halloween. So you tick all the boxes with one film.
Isn't there there's a Corpse Bride coming out. Is that right?
There is Corpse Bride as well. That's another good watch.
Oh, maybe it's already come out. I watched the trailer for Tim Burton's The Corpse Bride.
Yes.
With my sister recently. So I've been meaning to watch that.
All great options right there. I got one more roll for you. You got a 5 this time. This is called must haves. What is something that you can't be on set without, whether it's your sides, a certain snack, something to pass the time in between scenes, you name it?
I think my water bottle, just because it's very important to keep hydrated while you're working. but it becomes, you know, I feel very guilty about this, but it becomes an inconvenience to other people because I'm a very forgetful person. So oftentimes I'll just leave my water bottle in random places on set and I don't know, we'll have to go on the hunt for it. So yeah, it's my water bottle, but it's not always the most ideal thing.
As someone who's addicted to coffee, I'm always impressed when someone says their answer is a water bottle. I need that. I need you to send those vibes in my direction so I become a healthier person.
I will, but I will send those vibes, but I understand to you on the coffee because I'm a coffee lover as well.
All right. It's always good to have the balance. Yeah. So let's get into the meat of it here. I'm going to kick it off with a complicated two-part question for you about first getting into the industry. So first, do you remember when you first decided that you wanted to become an actor? But then do you remember the moment when you discovered that you needed to be an actor, when a performance just felt so right that you knew deep down that you had to have that feeling again?
I think when I discovered that I wanted to become an actor, or that it could be, you know, a potential career path, was when I was 13. I did a film called Consent, the Louise Nicholas story, which was it's a true story about a woman called Louise Nicholas who was sexually abused by a group of policemen when she was very young. She took them to court. It was a very harrowing story. And I played the young Louise. And it kind of opened my eyes to the potential of like sharing really important stories through acting, through film. When I realized I needed to be an actor, I think I keep on realizing that. It's because it can be quite an emotionally draining job. So you go on ups and downs. Yeah, constantly rediscovering that need. I think recently was when this year I filmed a series called Life After Life, which was directed by John Crowley. And he was such a wonderful director. And I had a wonderful experience on that production. And we were coming to the last day of shooting, and I was just like mourning, yeah, really, really mourning the ending, the coming to an end of that production. And that's when I realized, like, whoa, this is so, acting is so meaningful to me, and it's just what I really love to do, especially the collaboration. I really love the discussion side of acting. I think my favorite time, like my favorite part of the process at the moment, is the rehearsal period, because you can like just kind of talk and discuss and collaborate and bounce your ideas off of each other. Because it really is like it's a team effort. I think going back to the question, I'm constantly realizing how much I need this.
I love that answer so much. It was like kind of infectious, and it just filled my heart for enthusiasm for this industry.
Yay.
Okay. Going way, way back. So I'm not sure if I have the dates accurate, depending on when these were actually filmed, but can you tell me anything you remember about being on the set of a Hobbit movie, especially because if I have my dates right, I think you shot two smaller movies right before that. So what was your first impression of what it's like to be on a big, crazy Hollywood set?
I was so young. I think when you're that young, you kind of take those things for granted. I think I was 11 maybe at the time, 11 or 12. And so the thing I remember most was sitting in the makeup chair and looking to my right and seeing the shelf, a shelf, like multiple shelves filled with elf wigs. And just like ever since then I've been obsessed with playing an elf or a fairy or something where I could wear very much like Anya's hair, so like a long platinum blonde like straight wig. I think that would be like so much fun. So that's like one of the things I remember from that time. But yeah, it was just a huge production. It was filmed in Miramar in Wellington, and they, for the longest time, they had a huge green screen up, and you couldn't miss it when you drove through Miramar. It was massive. And just the sets that they made, especially, I can't remember the name of the town that it was, but it was the river town that was at the base of the mountain that Smaug lived in, I think. And it was so incredible, absolutely incredible to see a creation like that.
So now I'm lucky enough to have a whole lot of time with you right now, but the panic is already kicking in that I'm not going to be able to hit all of your incredible titles. So to try to get a couple in here. So you've worked with some of the most incredible directors out there. I could go on a list right now, but we will be here for quite a while. So I imagine each and every one of them has their own unique approaches to their work, but do you ever notice any shared traits among the directing greats, things that you really appreciate that all of them do for you?
I think, I'm not a director, so I don't know everything that goes into it. From what I can tell, it's a really hard job because you're having to juggle so many things at once. But for me, something that I really appreciate in a director is when they lead with kindness, I think, because they are the leader of the set. They're the one that everyone is looking to. And I think great actors don't have to assert their dominance or power, but the environment that they create, one that is a caring and kind of embracing environment, one where a director who listens to people, who kind of incorporates different experiences and ideas. I love working with those kinds of directors. I think that's really important. But again, I'm not a director. I don't know what it is to be a director. So but that's what, as an actress, that's what I appreciate.
So bringing up the idea of a director setting the tone, it also makes me think the actor who has the longest filmography, is the most famous, is number one on the call sheet. They often have the opportunity to set the tone on set too. Yeah. So on any of your past projects, have you ever seen a co-star like that do something that you really admired and, put in your back pocket to bring onto one of your films where you're number one on the call sheet?
Yeah. Do you know, I think... I'm thinking of Ben Foster in Leave No Trace. I think I really admired how invested he was in the film. Ben really, really, really cared and about Leave No Trace, and he was about to become a dad himself, so it meant a lot to him. And he just was completely engaged and present. He had opinions and ideas, and he was excited about it. And he'd show up, and he'd be ready to go, and he'd be open to anything. And also how generous he was to me, how open he was to connecting with me and making me feel welcome. And I really loved working with Ben, and I thought the kind of tone that he set was really wonderful. And I just feel very lucky that I was able to work with him and Deborah, who is incredible, him and Deborah on my first the first film I did overseas.
Such a good movie. And bringing that up, Leave No Trace is often referred to as your breakout project, and it's a very easy thing to jot down in an article, but they didn't really feel that way to you when that movie came out and people started to see it. Did anything feel different? Did doors open that you didn't even realize were there before?
I think I was surprised at how well it did. I love the film. I think Deborah did a wonderful job. I really do. I'm beyond proud of it, and I have such wonderful memories from that experience. But I remember watching it for the first time, and it was slow. It was a slow burner, and it was quiet, and it's not like a Marvel film that all my friends, those were the kind of films that my friends were watching and that they would get excited about. So I was like, I didn't think people would enjoy it. So I was so... I was so relieved and so honored when people just were so moved by it. Yeah, I think it did. It 100% opened doors for me. I was so lucky to have gotten that role. So lucky. And it really was the beginning of a lot of things for me.
It's one of the most exciting things to me when a movie comes out and someone out there looks at the trailer or something, it's not for me. I don't want to see that. And then they see it and they wind up falling hard for it.
Yeah.
So with that being a bit of a game changer, I'm curious how it reshaped what, you know, making it or the dream looked like, because, you know, you have an idea of what you want to achieve before that movie comes out and it changes the game. But again, going back to the idea of doors opening that you might not have realized were even there before, how did that impact what your ultimate goals were for what you wanted to do with an acting career?
To be honest, I still don't know what my ultimate goals are.
You don't have to.
Okay. I just want to keep on working with people. I want to keep on collaborating. I think something I did, you know, when Leave No Trace was released and I started going to different meetings to meet with different potential agents, they kind of like... made it known to me that I could become a writer or a producer, right? Or I could direct. Like, you know, I don't just have to be an actress. I could kind of experiment in different kind of parts of creating a film. And I don't think I'm at the stage yet to do that. I definitely, as I was saying, like acting too, but directing is a big job. And I want some more time to, like, you know, grow personally and kind of develop my own voice before I make something. I'm very excited about what could possibly happen in the future, and not just with acting, but I'd like to go to university. I'd like to do lots of things.
That's so cool. It's so cool to know that, you know, at that moment you were encouraged to, you know, explore other areas of the industry too. I feel like, I don't know. I just would have assumed that wasn't always the case, where folks wanted you guys to have tunnel vision and just focus on doing this and doing it great and doing it the best you can. But that's a good way to look at it.
I think that says a lot about the team that I have. I'm very lucky with the people that surround me, with my managers and agents. And I think, you know, they've always been incredibly accepting and encouraging and motivating to me. They didn't pigeonhole me. They didn't, you know, I don't know, they didn't, they've never like forced me one way or another. It's like been a very collaborative process. They've really empowered me, so I'm really lucky there.
Speaking of the team you have behind you, I'm always curious to hear a little bit about when someone makes a big decision, especially when it's a big decision and you're choosing between two very good things. So I remember it was announced that you had signed on for Top Gun Maverick and you decided not to do that and to pursue other projects. So what was the collaboration with your team like when it comes to making a big decision like that?
I think I really listened to my team because they've been in the industry for a lot longer than I have. And so they have a lot more experience than I do. Also, it just comes down to instincts. I think I was very lucky to have the option to do something else. I did Lost Girls instead. I was so honored to have been like considered to be a part of Top Gun. That's bloody amazing. That's really, really cool. But I think Lost Girls was a story that I was really interested in telling, that had was a female director. It had basically the entire cast was female. So I really wanted to be a part of that.
I like that you chose. I'm sure Top Gun Maverick is going to be great, but Lost Girls is quite excellent. So if anyone out there has not seen it, highly recommend it. All right, Last Night in Soho now. So I've never really seen anything like this story before. Mm-hmm. So it was making me curious. Do you remember what the very first description of the story that you got was and how that compares to the final film that we're going to see now?
I honestly cannot remember what the first description was. It probably would have been psychological thriller. I think It was like, because, you know, you've seen it, it's so complex. Like, there's so much to the movie. It's hard to do an elevator pitch for it, I think. Even like doing these interviews or Q&As, I keep on like remembering moments that I'd completely forgotten about. It was a little while ago that I saw the film. It was even longer ago that we actually even filmed it. So I keep on remembering different things. But I think I didn't, you know, reading the script, it's a great script, really great script, but it's such a visual film as well. So I couldn't like imagine completely what it was going to be. And so every day I'd show up on set and I'd be like, right, that's what this is going to look like. All right, that's what we're going to be doing. Or I don't know. Some of it was quite daunting. You know, there's lots of stunts and dancing and all of that. But yeah, it was a really amazing kind of challenge for me.
So I was reading a bit of the production notes, and I was reading this part where Edgar had asked you if there was anything that you'd be scared or nervous about doing. And your response to that was like, no, it's all good. Let's do it. So now looking back, if you had the opportunity to re-answer his question, what questions would you have asked him?
I think I don't know why I said no, it's all good, not worried about anything. Like, mate, that was such a dumb answer, because there were lots of things I should have kind of asked more about. I think, what is something? I know, it's hard, because I think, you know, Edgar had so much amazing material for me to pull from, a lot of like material that he'd been inspired by, or that he was kind of like incorporating ideas from into the film. So I was really lucky that I had all of that available to me. Maybe I should have asked, tell me, how long are the night shoots actually going to be? Because they were like a good 3 weeks, maybe more, a solid night shoot. So maybe I should have been a little bit more prepared for that. You never like going into like anything, you're never as prepared as you should be. It's always something that catches you off guard.
That's what keeps you on your toes. It makes all this very exciting, though.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. Another thing that caught my eye in the production notes was you said, I want to get this right, I feel like I'm coming out of this project with a lot more knowledge of what it means to be an actor. So with that in mind, what is a new tool in your acting toolkit, so to speak, that you know you can credit to your experience on Last Night in Soho?
I think I think the big thing is like, you know, to be able to like separate yourself from your character. I wouldn't say I'm a method actress, because I think that can be quite dangerous personally, at least for me. I need that distinction between me and who I'm playing, especially when, you know, you're taking on dark subject matters, which I often do. So I think that is it, just to be able to return to myself at the end of the day, and to spend time with family and friends, and to do things that I enjoy, and not to feel as if I always need to be in that character's headspace. I think I thought, while filming Last Night in Soho, I thought that in order to give a good performance, you know, if Ellie was suffering, then I should be suffering, but that's not true. I think you do a better job. Again, this is just like, you know, this is me, it's different for everyone, but I do a better job when I'm actually happy, because then I'm not constantly second guessing myself, and I am able to be like proud of myself. I'm able to be proud of my work. So that's really important as well, just to, you know, take care of yourself. And also I think just like Edgar was so, I mean, like, he's such a specific director. So he really taught me a lot, I think. I really admired, like, he is so passionate about what he does, and he is so invested in what he does. So that was really, inspirational to me.
It's one of the things I love about him most, because I think you can see that passion for what he does radiating off the screen, and that kind of quality catches on and it adds enthusiasm to the audience experience.
Yeah, you really do. Like, he's, you know, he's so, so dedicated to what he does. And you can't, you know, you don't only see that in, like, in the film, but you also see that in the way he's promoting the film as well. He puts everything into it. It's really amazing.
Absolutely. All right. I have to ask about some of the movie magic here, because I'm literally sitting there watching certain scenes of this movie, and I just, like, I want to shout, like, this is what movie magic is, and it excites me to no end. So I guess when it comes to the choreography, let's start with, like, what was the most difficult thing to pull off? And can you kind of walk us through, you know, the technical components of how you make that happen?
There are a lot of difficult things to pull off. I can't even, like, my mind is running a blank. I can't even pick just one. But I definitely think the Café de Paris sequence, like the dancing, that was really hard to pull off, because it was a lot of it was done live. There was very little stitching or editing in that sequence, except for the one shot they used in the trailer. Otherwise, there's and I didn't even realize this was out. There's behind the scenes footage out there of Anya and I ducking and kind of like running out of shot and you know, like swapping places, like behind Matt, like Anya would duck down and I'd come up from behind. So yeah, I think it was really complicated, but like so satisfying when we got through the whole thing. Yeah, just it took a lot of dance rehearsals, a lot of time. Another difficult thing was the opening shot with Ellie kind of dancing in her newspaper dress through the bedroom. The difficult thing about that was that the dress was expertly made. It was amazing, but it was so big, and whenever I twirled or whatever, it would get caught on something and rip, and I'd feel so guilty because Sam and one of the costume team, she'd put so much time and effort into making it. So I was like, oh, I don't want to ruin this incredible creation. But yeah, well, I guess another difficult thing was just like working in Soho as well during the night and during the day, like at all hours really, because there are so many people that aren't gonna get out of your shot, that will, you know, be walking right on through if they want to. I remember there was one scene outside of a nightclub with Michael, and there was it was in the middle of the night, and there was a group of drunk partiers who walked through the shot, and they were trying to distract us, but we just kept on going, and eventually they realized they weren't going to get our attention, so they just kind of walked off because they were bored. So yeah, just
you're
dealing
professionals
with that.
Right there.
Yeah.
All right, before I have to let you go, we play one more game on Collider Ladies Night, and you're going to play My Movie My Way, and we're going to put a little bit of a Last Night in Soho spin on it. So We're gonna build your own scenario here. The first question is, we've got to pick a particular place. So let's say you can rent a room in the movie or TV show house of your choice. Where do you want to rent that room?
I am going to say maybe like, does it have to be a room? Can it be like, I want to say the cat bus from my neighbor Totoro.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I've always wanted to sit in that cat bus because it looks so like fluffy and furry and comfortable.
The location of your choice. I don't know it very well, so you're going to have to lead me through the rest of these. So you go to sleep there, and you get to experience the life of one of the characters in it. Which character do you pick and why?
I guess I'll pick Totoro because I just think he's like his den in the woods at the base of this huge tree. I don't know if you've seen My Neighbor Totoro. It might have been a bit of a mean one for me to choose, but he just like lives in such a beautiful green forest world, and he can fly, and he's so big and fluffy, and you just be able to hug yourself.
Not a mean one to choose, because it's one I should have watched long ago, and this is going to give me the motivation to prioritize it like I should have.
Okay, good.
All right, the next part of this. Now, you wake up and you get to take a quality of this character with you. What is it?
Mm-hmm. The love of nature.
Good choice. All right, one last one here, because, you know, we always like to put new spins on things, so... You enter this movie. What is the big twist that you want to make happen to make your version of it different?
I don't know. It was all a dream.
That always works. It's always a good twist to lean on.
If my English teacher heard me say that, she would not be impressed.
All right. As we wind down Ladies' Night, we always finish with the same questions. First one is, can you name someone who you think is changing this industry for the better?
Margaret Qualley. I've just been watching Maid recently, and I just think she is so amazing, and she's someone I'd really, really, really love to work with. So I'm going to say Margaret Qualley, because she brings such light and a real magical spark to her performances.
Excellent choice. Yet another one that I have to bump to the top of my must-watch list, because I hear so some wonderful things about Maid. Final question for you now. It's a heavy one. You could take it in a lighter direction if you prefer. What is the biggest fear that you've ever had that you've actually managed to overcome?
I'm working on it. I think I'm working on them. I was talking about this before, because there was this cheeky spider in the room that I'm in, and it frightened the lovely lady sitting behind me. So I used to be terrified of spiders, and I've slowly been working my way up. So I've slowly been able to like hold spiders in my hand, little tiny ones, and then take them outside and set them free. I don't know, I'm working on it.
I was about to say, your spiders are my bees, but I have not made near as much progress. So you're doing a lot better than I am.
I love bees. I love bees ever since Leave No Trace. That's another thing I took from Leave No Trace, is love of bees. I've never been afraid of them. I'm just like in awe of them.
I know they're good. You're good. I can't relax, but maybe I should just like throw myself into it. And
maybe don't throw yourself into a hive. I don't think.
But not that.
No, but I think just stay calm and collected.
Okay. I'm gonna take that advice and roll with it. Thomason, thank you so much for spending some time on Ladies' Night with us. Again, congratulations on Last Night in Soho. I am a little obsessed with it. And huge congratulations on your entire filmography. You are exceptional.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It was lovely seeing you again.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.